Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 343 of the Roguecast, recorded August 10th, 2021. You want to go to Whopper now.
All right, we are back. I am back from the lands of Boston.
Yep.
We did not record last week.
And a lot of news and things are happening, and Free Comic Book Day is approaching.
Yes, yeah. I guess we should start by talking about Free Comic Book Day. We didn't do our usual, like, look through. We've got a stack of them sitting here of all the free comics. I think the most notable thing we all noticed was that there is a book called House of Slaughter that is a tie-in to Something is Killing the Children, which yep. we all really enjoy.
And is it the entire first issue?
I believe it's the entire first issue.
Yeah, that's probably going to get one of our highest recommendations. But, I mean, there's also, like, some big stuff from DC, like their... YA stuff with Raven
and Beast Boy.
And Beast Boy.
There's a King Suicide Squad King Shark.
Yep.
There is a Batman. There is a Spider-Man Venom in there.
First issue of Stray Dogs.
First issue of Stray Dogs.
Oh, that's
really
pretty
good.
Huge. Yeah. And we just got all of those back in stock again, so you could read that, like it, buy the remaining issues.
It's true. There's also the Last Kids on Earth, the sort of zombie all ages thing that does well for us. Couple different Star Wars High Republic.
Yeah.
There's another Avatar and Korra book from Dark Horse. The Black Mass book Black and Calexit, which is two of their sort of hits. There's a whole bunch of good stuff in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like every year, there's a lot of winners and a lot of good comics.
And a lot of losers.
It sounded like that's where Nick was going.
No.
But I do think we need to, like, sort of make, throw out up front that because we're in stage five, you've got to wear a mask.
Yeah. Yes, you have to. We're going to be checking. We're going to be requiring. There's a lot of kids coming in on that day. And
we had gone back to lenient mask stuff. We were recommending it. We just really, with the amount of people that we might get in on Free Comic Book Day, we just can't risk it. We want to do it for our safety and yours.
Yep.
So just play ball with us here. Be cool. Most of y'all are very cool.
Yeah.
And come out for Free Comic Day.
Yeah. All right. And then also slowed, we had planned to maybe start Friday Night Magic up again in August, but all the plague rats ruined that.
Yeah.
So we're suspending that again. We're not going to do Friday Night Magic for a while, but we are still going to do occasional events. So there will be, on August 20th, there'll be a Magic Mystery Booster Draft, so you can sign up for that. And then coming up September, we'll have the pre-release for Innistrad Midnight Hunt, which is their werewolf-themed Innistrad.
Yeah, yeah.
So... there are Magic events, but basically they're just going to be all after-hour events. So
yes, the one way you can help this is if you get friends and family vaxxed and wearing masks.
Yes. Yes, please do. All right, let's talk news. Let's talk Disney Plus set the premiere for Hawkeye.
Okay.
Yep. Which is Wednesday, November 24th, which is basically 16 weeks after What If starts,
which
I think indicates
tomorrow.
What If is 16 episodes, right?
Yeah, it is.
Didn't we get that sense? So... are we going to get 16 weeks of What If? That's fantastic.
Who is Hawkeye going to be?
Hawkeye is a guy who shoots arrows.
Is it? Or is it going to be a girl who shoots arrows?
It's going to be both.
Okay.
Yeah, it's both.
And it's also going to have Florence Pugh from Black Widow in it.
And is it his daughter, or is
no,
it another
it's
character?
It's another character.
Yeah.
It's played by, she's played by Hayley Steinfeld, and she is playing Kate Bishop.
Yep.
Okay.
And her mom is played by Vera Farmiga, I believe?
It's also going to be heavily influenced off of the
Matt Fraction,
David Aja.
Which is interesting because I was just watching Avengers 2,
mm-hmm.
which sort of introduces the backstory for Hawkeye in the MCU, and that Hawkeye is not the same Hawkeye as that Fraction run. Like, that's going to be a very different take.
Well, I
for
think
one thing, he's not a bachelor bumming around.
No, he's
around.
Got a family. Like, I assume they're not going to ditch his family.
He might be on the outs because of all the murders he actually committed with his fam.
Oh, that's he went through
a lot to get him back. They have to forgive him.
Yeah, I want a happy ending for him.
He basically became the Punisher. That is who he became.
Yeah, but I don't want him to. I don't want him to be on the outs of his family. I want his family to accept him.
That's a lot of murder.
Look, we've all done things. And I think our family should forgive us.
I basically, every time something, I run up against some difficulty in life, I go on a kill spree.
Yeah, yeah. We've all been there.
I take on a code name.
Uh-huh.
Last time I was Burger King.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. That was unfortunate for everybody.
Well, it was litigious.
Well, the problem was, Dave, you called your nunchucks the Whoppers. I think that was really the problem that, that caused the problem.
I would go to people and say, do you want to go to Whopper Town? Right before I served up a violent beatdown. Now, my problem is that I wasn't going after criminals.
No, it was actually at people, Burger King.
They thought that I was offering some sort of special.
I think it's going
to
be...
And then I took them to Whopper Town.
I honestly think it's going to be the reverse, that he is not ready to sort of join his family because he doesn't feel like he...
I'd be more okay with that.
And but I think to some degree after like that sort of angst was sort of central to two movies, I don't know that I'd necessarily want to see him struggling to reintegrate with them.
Well, they've never dealt with that.
I want it's true. It's not unreasonable. I want a happier Hawkeye show. Yeah. I don't want angsty Hawkeye.
Well, we are getting the Tracksuit Bros.
Okay.
Right. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
I wasn't as big on that run, so this may be one that Dave skips.
And we're getting Pizza Dog.
It won't be one you skip. It'll be good. Well, they always do the best version.
It can be good, and I could still skip it, actually.
Dave's not going to watch What If. He doesn't care.
It's true. And I'm definitely not watching What If.
Yeah.
Not even going to try it, probably.
What If is amazing. What if it's one of my favorite concepts? I'm so happy to have him doing it.
I don't want to see a child's cartoon.
I think...
remind me what you watched last week that we talked about.
Something that was a good child's cartoon.
Oh, He-Man?
Yeah. if y'all tell me it's great, I might watch it. It's not a diss on it. People don't have to watch all the stuff you watch.
It's great.
I think our customers have to tell Dave that it's great, because I don't think you...
I need somebody more reliable than the biggest Marvel whore.
That's fair. I mean, I'd argue, but that's actually 100% accurate.
The one downside of us getting Hawkeye, they did announce that Ms. Marvel is getting delayed until next year.
Ah, damn. I kind of figured that. So, I didn't see that announcement.
Yeah, it's getting delayed till I think, early 2022.
Okay, that's all right.
Which is not bad, but...
Is the actress they cast in that, like, one of those people who's, like, she's 20, but she's playing 16 or something like that? Because otherwise, I always worry about kids aging out of the roles.
I'm not sure.
She could shoot up like a reed.
I think they've already filmed it, but I think they're trying... Yeah. They have so much coming out. Yeah. I think they're trying to sort of...
I get that.
Pace it a little bit more. Yeah. I mean, they've got 3 more movies coming out in the next 4 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
So
I'm also not unhappy about having a flood of Marvel content.
No, I'm not either. I think it's great.
But by the way, speaking of kids aging out, we didn't have this on our list, but Stranger Things got announced for its, I guess, final season?
Oh, is it final?
It's got to be, right? They're all growing out of the parts.
Unless you follow them as teenagers adults. Or even as adults.
I don't think Netflix is going to release the reins of Stranger Things.
It's hard to imagine them letting that go.
I thought the Duffer Brothers said they were only doing 3.
No, that's possible. Yeah. That's possible. But even then, I can sort of be like, they might be like, after a couple years, they might be like, we're coming back.
Yeah,
maybe.
But there was like some like sort of like micro trailer or like little scene or something released that I watched that wasn't... Didn't show too much, but it showed, like, this might have been released earlier, but it showed the Institute or whatever.
Oh, like a flashback kind of thing?
It looked like it was in the present.
Oh, okay.
So apparently it is not the final season.
Oh?
Yeah. I didn't think so.
Okay.
Like I said, Netflix...
I thought it was still at least scheduled to be, and then they were going to probably...
I guess the Duffer Brothers have said that they're not 100% sure.
They're like, we have 15 seasons planned. Anyway, I would like to see some more Stranger Things. I hope that the pandemic didn't derail them too much.
Yeah.
It could have.
It's going to get to the point where, what is it, Finn Wolfhard? Is that what his name
is? Finn Wolfhard.
Is going to be requesting like $1 million an episode since he's becoming such a big thing.
Right.
After being in Ghostbusters.
And they'll be like, hey, Finn Wolf, soften it up a bit.
Or if Ghostbusters tanks, they might be like, Finn, you're going to get $100,000 an episode. I could do $100,000 an episode, by the way. I could actually do $75,000 an episode. And
I'll do it for $20.
I will give it a 75% effort.
You give me $20, I'll play 11.
I mean, I'll do it for free just to be like doing scenes with like David Harbour, because I think that would be a blast.
He's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Cobra Kai star Zolo Maraduena?
Yeah, the lead.
In Cobra Kai? Oh, that's who that is?
Yeah, what's his name?
He's the guy who goes to Johnny initially to join Cobra Kai.
He's been cast as Blue Beetle in HBO Max.
Yeah,
that's
fantastic.
Cool.
That's
good
casting.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
That kid can act.
Yeah.
He's fun.
Yep.
He can do his own stunts.
I feel like he kind of looks like Jaime Reyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Kelly Hamner posted about that. It's like, here's my sketch of Jaime Reyes, and here's the kid they cast to play him.
Yeah.
And he's like, it looks like him.
It was a really good cast.
That's dope. Yeah. Is this going to be a standalone show? What is
I believe
it
it's a standalone show.
It's on HBO Max, yeah. That's... Sounds so, like
I wonder if that, like, because they're doing what, a Batgirl show?
Yeah, they're a Batgirl
will these
show.
Tie in? I guess nobody knows.
It's a Batgirl movie, it's not a show.
Oh, okay. But yep. It's a Blue Beetle show, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I want it to be more like Stargirl and less like Titans, I guess is what I'm hoping.
I think that's likelier.
I'm weirdly excited for Titans, which comes back this week.
Titans has been fun.
I'll watch it.
Because apparently Tim Drake is going to show up.
Well, I saw Oracle on the ad.
Yeah, Oracle's in there, Tim Drake's showing up, and then we get Jason as actual Red Hood.
You know what's weird
yeah.
is those are all Batman things and not really Titan things.
Oh, yeah, they definitely have gone all in on the Batman stuff on Titans. I mean, yeah. They had Batman in it.
Yeah.
So they definitely have decided, oh, this is based on our Batman show, which I feel like at DC, you know how... there's like a we have like gravity. We have like a natural pull.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone working at DC is always resisting turning whatever they're working on into a Batman project.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you're doing. If you're doing, say, a Superman movie, it's hard not to just make it a Batman movie all of a sudden.
That said, they also had Hawk and Dove, and that's pretty weird.
Yeah. That is pretty weird.
And they even had the Doom Patrol on it. That's pretty weird.
It's also said I never finished season two, so I have no idea.
I did. I don't remember what happened.
That is roughly, by the way, a lot. I like only just started season two, I think.
I never finished Doom Patrol season 2.
Oh, Doom Patrol season 2 is great.
Yeah.
I don't remember what happened to that either. All I'm saying is I hope the recaps are good.
They doomed. They patrolled.
Yeah, so everything was great.
And there was a Beard Hunter. I remember that.
I do remember Beard
Hunter.
Did they actually? That's season 1.
I know.
He was in season 2.
But he was great. I remember season 1 a lot.
Dorothy Spinner was the big part of season 2.
Oh, right.
I don't remember exactly how that all came about. There's a whole big thing. Anyway,
I lost a lot of memory to the pandemic.
Yeah, that's true.
It's been weird.
There is a female-led Chronicle 2 in the works. Now,
Do people remember what Chronicle is?
Chronicle was the prelude to Josh Trank's Fantastic Four in a lot of ways.
It was his one success. A found footage style movie about some kids who get superhero type powers.
Yeah,
they're like high schoolers
from like an alien spaceship or whatever.
Yeah, it's pretty decent.
And it starts getting worse and worse, and eventually they fight amongst themselves.
Yep.
Then he turned out... is he the guy... He turned out to be a scumbag?
He was pretty awful, yeah.
Okay.
And also, Fantastic Four was really terrible, and I forget what he did after that.
Didn't he do what was the kind of kid getting superpowers, or am I misremembering?
I think you might be misremembering the one that was like the horror thing.
Yeah.
No, that's James Gunn's brother.
Oh, was that?
Yep,
okay.
That was James Gunn.
Yeah.
Yeah, Josh Trank, I believe, did Fantastic Four, and that was the end of his career. He did... he did Chronicle in 2012.
It's Brightburn, is what
I was thinking.
And
then he did Fantastic Four in 2015. And now apparently he has something called Capone that he wrote for 2020.
I wonder what that's about.
5 years later.
I remember you liked Chronicle, and I watched it at your place.
I like Chronicle quite a bit, actually. I'm glad to see that he has nothing to do with Chronicle 2.
I like found footage movies. I liked Chronicle solidly. I could potentially see it. I could also see it being like completely meh. But they probably thought, you know, like they're probably gonna have more of a budget, and maybe they have some decent thoughts. Gonna be up to the writing.
More stories in that world is interesting. I can see it, and it's female led. So I wonder if it's like gonna be a daughter or if they're just doing something that's completely different. I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, I'm interested. As long as Josh Trank isn't involved, I am interested in watching more Chronicle.
He's the guy who made the one you like.
I know, but that was a mistake.
He got lucky.
It's
Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead.
Yes, exactly.
People still
that.
Swear that his FF was good. It's just that Warner Brothers or whoever had it. Was it?
Do they?
Where are
these people?
I just heard it recently on a podcast that I was listening to with a guy that was plugged into Hollywood. He actually
are you
just
sure
like
he
a,
was a human and not an AI?
Was it Josh Trank doing a funny voice?
No, it was not.
Oh, I'm not Josh Trank,
but I sure think Fantastic Four was great.
Groovy.
Wow,
that was weird.
A little bit.
We record this in our office, by the way, and if we kind of get noisy, you could hear it if you're outside the door. And, like, if they did, they'd probably, like, think the tick is in here now.
Yeah. Dave, you were talking about recording in the office, and I thought you were going to say there might be a gas leak. And we're just
what other
right.
stories do we
Let's
have?
Let's talk trailers. There were quite a few trailers. The big one, I think, is Why the Last Man, which is coming out in mid-September.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, it has been a while since that came out, too, so people, if you don't know... The Vertigo book in the early 2000s, mid-2000s.
Yeah, it's 20 years old or something,
After Vertigo's, I feel like after Vertigo's big explosive breakout in the 90s, Preacher, Sandman, all these other ones, that they were hitting a little bit of a trough, and then Why the Last Man came along,
and Fables,
and Fables, and those were their that kept Vertigo strong for another 10 years. And it is about a guy who is literally the last man on Earth after a mysterious plague wipes out all other male life
all
forms.
All male animals, yes.
Yeah, like, and...
Except for Yorick and his monkey.
Yorick and his monkey. And there's, it follows the kind of, it's got a little bit of that Stephen King The Stand vibe, as he, it's not just a, what caused this? It is a, they use it to explore, like, all sorts of ideas about gender relationships and what that means. And there is a mystery, though. There is, that kind of drives it, but it's not what it's about.
So, who finished this? Did you finish it, Nick? Did you finish
it? Yeah, it's my...
Dave,
it's,
did you finish it? I didn't think you did. But did you get to the reveal about the...
what the plague was?
Yeah.
Nope.
Okay, the reveal I thought was very disappointing and weird, and I wonder if, just like when they did Red Hood, and in the other media, and they basically just quietly eliminated the Superboy punch-in-the-walls reality thing.
Yeah.
And they did what should have been the answer in the first place, which was...
Lazarus Pit.
I wonder if they're going to change the answer of what caused it in this
Well, it's like the same thing with like Scott Pilgrim. I mean, they made that movie's ending better than the book did.
Yeah. I'm going to say there's a 90% chance they will change it.
I think they will, because it was super weird.
A little bit of like an ending of Battlestar Galactic.
Isn't Vaughn writing the treatment for this?
I think he's involved. I don't know. This has been in development for so long.
I thought when you said it's taken a while to come out, I thought you were referring to this has been in development.
Oh, the movie itself.
They were going to do it as a movie, and then it was going to be a TV show, and they had a different cast for it. Like, the woman who's playing Monica Rambeau was 355, and she's not, right? It's somebody else.
Yeah, I believe.
I think it's a different person.
Now that said, for those of you who did read the graphic novels or the comics, when we were watching this trailer, we spotted all the characters, and they're actually very easy to spot.
Yeah.
Everything from Yorick's sister to his mom, who's a politician, and that kind of like gives you a lens of like, oh, if every dude died, which there is a obviously wildly disproportionate amount of men in leadership positions in the world. Like, what kind of shakeups did that cause? What's the chaos? His mom is, like, a senator, like, a education secretary?
Yeah, something like that.
Or no, wait. Am I blurring this?
You're
with Battlestar Galactica?
Blurring. But, yeah, she's a relatively low-level governor member. I think she's the highest-ranking senator who's left or something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And there's a sister. There's a mysterious agent known as Agent 355.
Yep. There's a scientist named Dr. Mann.
Yep. A little on the nose there, Vaughn. Yeah. A little on the nose.
Anyway, this has gotten... There are some people who really don't like this book at this point, but I always really enjoyed it, and I am excited to see it adapted.
Yeah, I mean, I think Vaughn ambitiously threw his hat into the arena of, like, let's talk about men and women and gender relations and dating and sex and everything else in between.
And especially in these days, I think a man doing that story, people are like, I don't know about it. This would be a woman telling that story.
And even at the time, there was some of that. And like, Vaughn is not a perfect guy, but he's a pretty thoughtful dude.
Yeah.
And I think that they will also probably have taken some of the things that might have been like a, you know, misfires or like a story direction that went kind of a little off, and they probably have improved it, or like quite possibly they did. Who knows? They might have made it suck. I don't know. But the trailer looked good.
FX has a pretty good track record.
FX literally looked good in it. Yeah. It like had a eerie vibe, which it should. So that it was like when they're showing the initial catastrophic number of deaths, they're only showing little kind of snippet flashes, but it felt like it had like big weight. And then there's a sort of how does the world pick up the pieces thing, and what does it mean?
All set to the James Brown song.
Yeah, and eerie. This is a man's world.
Yeah, good use of music.
Yep.
Anyway, it's a solid trailer. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah.
Starting, I think either the week of or the week after, Netflix has Midnight Mass. Yep. Which is Mike Flanagan's next project, which is seems to be sort of the same anthology type thing he was doing with Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor. It's a lot
is
of the same
an anthology?
Cast. Well, I mean, it's basically taking the same cast. They kind of like American Horror Stories, an anthology.
Yeah.
You take the same cast, you put them into a new story. Like, I don't think it has any tie into the Haunting of Hill House.
Right.
But then again, it might. I mean, Bly Manor didn't directly tie into Hill House in any way, did it?
No, I don't think so. Well,
no.
there could have been some snippets that did, but
I think that
it was another adaptation, like wildly liberal treatment of an old novel. I believe was the Turn of the Screw, I think, by Henry James. It was very loose adaptation, but the framing device actually was similar to the actual framing device in Return of the Screw. Or turn of, the turn of the screw.
I honestly...
The return of the screw.
I honestly feel like Flanagan is becoming this day and age of Stephen King in a lot of ways. Not only is he doing a lot of this,
right.
This story that this show is telling definitely feels like a Needful Things or a lot of this, because it's about a mysterious priest showing up in this island community and...
And that island community looks like one of those... It looks like one of those, like, main seaside towns or something like that. Or, like, from Lovecraft, it looks like it could be... Innsmouth,
Although I'll say this, I think Mike Flanagan has a better track record than Stephen King. Stephen King has a lot more misses.
If you're just doing a hit or miss...
In television and movies.
Yeah, but, I mean, King's, like... highs are pretty damn high.
He's got like 15 great books or something.
Yeah, like stellar.
If we're comparing books, that's not fair. I'm saying TV and movie adaptations.
For instance, Flanagan has not even written one book, Randy.
That's true. Good point, Dave.
So it's falling apart. No, but certainly he has that vibe of Stephen King, which is a very humanistic kind of take on horror.
Well, he adapted
but also,
one of King's.
He did at least Gerald's two. Game, Dr. Yeah. Sleep, Gerald's Dr. Game, Sleep, and probably something I forgot.
So yeah, it's a reasonable thing to
but,
say that he
Yeah, did. What you're going to get is like, I mean, I think particularly Haunting of Hill House left a mark on a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like, I know very few people who saw that and did not like it, or even love it.
Yeah.
Blind Manor was a little bit more mixed, but that sometimes happens with a sophomore effort.
Yep.
This is a miniseries, a movie?
7-episode miniseries.
Okay, so it's very similar format.
Yep.
I'm into it. How many...
I'm excited.
Who else from his cast was in it?
So I saw Zach Guilford, who I know from Friday Night Lights.
Yep.
Raul Cooley,
which is from iZombie.
Right, yeah, Rahul, yeah.
Are either of those dudes from Hill House?
Rahul is in
Blind Manor.
Blind Manor, yeah.
Okay.
He was like the chef.
Who was the brother who had written the book about the family, the tell-all?
Yeah, he's the priest,
Hamish Linklater.
Which is a pretty notable...
he's been in a lot of stuff. Yeah.
I like Flanagan's vibe a lot.
Yep.
He can be both very, like... Like, he always has a story to tell and deep characters and super fucking scary scenes.
Henry Thomas is somewhere.
Henry Thomas is in everything he does.
Yeah.
But Hamish Linklater, I think, most recognizable lately, he was in The Stand, the new version.
Okay.
He was the... scientist that sort of was actually good to the good scientist.
Yeah.
Annabeth Gish, who also was in some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
She was in one of the Haunting Hill House. She was Mrs. Dudley.
I mean, honestly, Mike Flanagan can do whatever the hell he wants and I'll watch it.
I think he's not let me down at all.
Yeah.
I always know it's going to be personal horror.
Yeah, people who haven't seen his other stuff should check out, like, Oculus and some other movies he's made.
What was the name of the first one that he did? The kind of one that is a little rough around the edges?
The weird indie one with the tunnel?
Yes.
Oh, man, I'm blanking.
It had to do with, like, death in Absentia.
In Absentia.
That was probably one of my favorites of his. I actually really like it a lot, too. It's a really well-done story.
Yeah, it does. Like, you should maybe know going in, if you catch it, that it's a kind of a smaller-budget indie vibe, but good actors, I think, and a neat storyline about a woman whose husband has been missing for years. He's about to be declared dead in absentia, and she's trying to figure out how to move on with her life, and there's a lot of other weird stuff going on.
I thought it was, like, a college, thing that he did but I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, like that for Flanagan?
Yeah.
Huh? I don't know.
I think you're right. I think it actually was film school or something.
That guy's got some craft.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, what else do we have?
Going from the sublime to the ridiculous.
Yeah.
Venom Let There Be Carnage has a new trailer. Y'all were laughing it up at this, and I'm like, I'm just shaking my head at it.
Yes, we're laughing in the good way.
There's something about Tom Hardy in this role that he just kind of lets loose of his comedic chops a little bit. And
the Venom entity being... It is kind of like... what's the old TV show with the roommates that hate each other? The Odd Couple.
Oh, yeah.
It's a full-on Odd Couple thing.
Oh, my God. That's how this was pitched, wasn't it?
Probably.
It's like The Odd Couple, but with Spider-Man.
Or The Odd Couple, but where one of them eats brains.
Yeah.
Yes.
This one, so the first trailer they did, I thought was actually a little too silly. It showed some pretty goofy stuff. And I'm not saying this movie might not have stepped over the line of goofiness, but the first one had some silly stuff that I ended up finding endearing and not off-putting.
Yeah.
And this trailer I thought was better. It showed Carnage. I don't know how Carnage came to be in the thing? Was it just another symbiote in the comics?
Yes, Eddie Brock.
Cellmate, right?
Eddie Brock and Cletus Casti were cellmates. Venom broke out of prison, and it left a little bit of his symbiote behind after
symbiote goo,
and which infected Carnage.
Okay,
this was actually a rather clever redoing of it, where.
I don't think it's a big spoiler because it's in the trailer.
Where Cletus
he's like being interviewed through the bars, but he pulls him close and he bites his finger or something, and he gets some venom blood.
And
in
of course,
him.
You know, being a serial killer and wants to be scary, he's like, "I've tasted a lot of meat and that,
or a lot of blood,
a lot of blood, and that's different."
Yeah.
Honestly, the Woody Harrelson is a over-the-top serial killer. I'll watch it. It's fine.
Yeah. If it's as good as the first one, I think I will be pretty happy. I'd like for it to even be better. If it's weaker than that, I might fall off of this. We'll see. Randy, you're going to see it on opening night.
No, I'm not. I've still never seen the original Venom. I'm not going to.
You'll risk COVID to go out and see this at a theater, right?
The funny thing is, like, it's fine. I don't care that this exists. But I don't want it infecting Spider-Man.
Like a symbiote?
Like a symbiote.
You don't want it to get into MCU.
This feels a even, lot like...
Even I don't really want it to necessarily get into the MCU. I think it's fun as its own weird little opus.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like Deadpool. I enjoyed the Deadpool movies just fine because of Ryan Reynolds, but when it infects Marvel, I'm going to retroactively hate them.
Yeah.
Nope. It's going to be amazing.
Nope, I'm going to hate it.
Nick is positive forever and has a Lisa Frank notebook.
I still think you can bring these movies into the Marvel Universe. It's fairly easy. I mean,
but that doesn't mean you should.
You could, but they.
They're about
that,
to do all the crazy crap in the Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire.
What about that too?
That is also going to be the so almost like asides in a movie about a multiverse that will in other words, they can get it all out in that one movie, or and then maybe just have it show here and there or through weird dimensional goofiness. I do. There is a certain quality, and I say this in a good way, a house style of the MCU. They've developed a sort of style of writing where directors can express themselves, but it still feels all MCU. And these Sony movies don't particularly feel that MCU.
Yep.
It kind of, the writing is not quite up there, and I like Venom, but it doesn't feel of a piece.
I don't want Venom in the Avengers, okay? That's all I'm saying.
But okay, these movies are what they are, but... If, whatever happens in the Multiverse of Madness and the Spider-Man, was it No Way Home?
Yeah.
It changes things. It brings Venom into the MCU, and they do another Venom, Venom 3, under the MCU banner, and it works within the constraints of this, but you still have Tom Hardy in the role.
It's getting messy.
No, I don't like it.
I think it works.
It's getting messy. You know that I liked the X-Men movies better than most, at least the early ones, Singer's first few, the early first class.
Yeah.
Even those I probably wouldn't have wanted integrated with the MCU, even though they were done well.
Yeah.
Or at least I thought they were. But hope springs eternal for Nick. He might be the correct one in that it's happened whether we like it or not.
I think that's possible.
And
that's
Nick can be
about.
Like...
I just think you can always... We
theoretically,
always...
they could direct Tom Hardy, I think, better than he's been directed in these movies. But it's still kind of a schlocky character, don't you think? Fun schlocky,
Venom is a schlocky character.
Yeah, but in the MCU, theoretically, if they built him from the ground up, they could make him, scary and sympathetic on a deeper level, I think, than was even attempted in
But right
Venom.
Now he has nothing to do with Spider-Man, and that kind of takes an element of Venom.
It is a little weird, but their Spider-Man is so different anyway.
I don't know. I've always appreciated a good person taking the bad and making it good. In comics, so I feel like...
I like it when things... I guess because comics are already messy and were messy even when I started, the MCU has a certain purity of vision.
But I think we're on the way of becoming messy. I think the multiverse is going to make things messy.
Nick, you ready for
sense.
S.H.I.E.L.D. to be integrated?
Yeah,
you
let's
ready
bring in
for...
S.H.I.E.L.D. Let's bring in the Inhumans.
I feel like that is not happening. I figure they've gone out of their way and said that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not.
But Nick, they could re-envision it and make it better.
I still think there's an idea for a S.H.I.E.L.D. show that could work. But that was not it.
I don't know. I hope you're wrong. I don't want to see Venom in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Well, we're going to see Deadpool, and then you're going to start hating the MCU.
I don't want to see that either.
That's happening.
I know that. Oh. Maybe they're just doing a bunch of side things.
They've already said they're starting to film this year.
Things could happen. What if Free Guy's a huge success and he has just Free Guy 2 instead?
Yeah, that could happen.
I mean, he's...
Everyone go see Free Guy so Deadpool doesn't go to the Marvel Universe.
Let's move on because I don't think we're going to resolve this one today.
All right. The last thing is a Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez on Hulu.
TV show, right?
Only Murders in the Building. Yes, the TV show about a murder committed in like a New York co-op. And they don't know who did it, so they become like amateur detectives, but also they're making a podcast.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's these two older guys. So it's Martin Short and Steve Martin, two like really amazing comedians. Yep. And they, by the way, sometimes I see these things and I'm like, oh, they look kind of old and their kind of deliveries are a little off.
They look great.
I felt like they were on the mark.
A-list, yeah.
And I missed quite why. Is Selena Gomez just a neighbor? Is she
it looks
a
like
witness?
It looks like a neighbor, yeah.
Okay.
Well, the whole supporting cast is amazing. It's like Nathan Lane and...
who else? I saw Jane Lynch in there.
Jane Lynch is in there. But
also, and, like...
And this is like developed by Steve Martin, who... For people, I mean, like, if you don't know, he's, like, behind the scenes, he's not just a guy who's, like, a comedic actor, but he's, well, he's, like, a musical talent, too, and he's written a lot of comedic novels, which are also, like, dramatic sometimes.
Yeah, he wrote Shop Girl, which he was then starred in. Yep. He did Roxanne and L.A. Story in the 80s, 90s.
Yeah, this is a guy with some serious chops, and he can kind of do different speeds, and it looks like I'm getting a good vibe off of it.
He and Martin Short, of course, did a lot of the stuff. They did a comedy special together and all that stuff. Yeah. They're buddies from a while back.
Was Martin Short, was he on like on Arrested Development?
Yes, he was great on Arrested Development.
Yeah, I was just, I'm happy to see him back again and still kicking ass.
Yeah, so this looks like super fun. I'm very excited about it.
There's also a weird appearance by Sting.
There's also a weird appearance by Sting.
A spectacular appearance by Sting.
Really good.
And the, weirdly, the little spoofs of podcast stuff rang eerily true because they're like, to get acoustics right, they're like filming in a closet and like it's too hot. Yeah. Steve Martin's complaining about it. It's great.
It's like being in here and Dave complaining about it being too cold.
It is too cold in here, by the way.
We have to sacrifice for the rest of the store to be cold.
All right, that's it for news. We'll be back in just a second talking about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, August 4th and Wednesday, August 11th. Since we missed a week...
Yeah, we're just going to give a little quick highlight reel of the previous week's books. We would normally go through them a little bit deeper, but I think we just want to hit a few kind of high notes.
I think worth noting that it was the week they put out Nice House on the Lake number 3, a new issue of Batman. It was sort of a notable week for that.
Was that the week that also all 5 issues of the book Stray Dogs?
Yes, if you've not read Stray Dogs, into print. They put new covers, all horror movie influenced.
Yeah.
Of the series Stray Dogs.
You may remember us talking about this. It's the one that looks like is drawn as if it were like a Disney thing, but it's about these dogs finding out their owner might be a serial killer, and so it's a dark sort of adventure. Our new staffer...
Wait, did we not... Was Superman Son of Kal-El last week?
I was actually wondering about that.
It was 2 weeks ago. We talked
We actually did talk about it. Okay. When I was out there grabbing these books, Randy, I saw it, and I was like, oh, we should mention that, but I think we did mention
that. Okay, we did talk about that. Okay.
Still, anyway, if you want a book, well, it's really good.
Our new staffer, Randy Shireen,
she
read the... there was a little quiet in the last hour last week, and she started reading Stray Dogs, and she read all 5 of them.
Oh.
So I got to watch the emotional arc of somebody who starts early on, and she's like, I don't know, this is kind of like, this is feel like it's going to some dangerous places. And I was like, yeah, and it kind of like walks right up to the edge, and you may find it's too much, or maybe you may be okay with it. And like, I saw when she hit that spot, and she's like, do I want to keep reading?
Yeah, it is. It's harrowing.
Yeah, if you animals are in danger in this, and not all animals make it through.
Does the dog die? Yes.
But it's also, there's a lot of dogs, I would like to point out.
So not all dogs.
And if they were to lose a dog, you know.
Dave, not all dogs go to heaven?
At least one or two actually went to heaven. But I was like, keep on going, and she did like it, and she felt that it like it had a pretty good ending, and I did too.
It's very good, but it is dark.
Yeah, just you probably know from this convo whether it's you can deal with it or not.
It was almost too much for me.
There's something of an upbeat ending, just kind of dark.
Yeah. But also in terms of the number ones last week, I think Dave, you and I were both surprised by this. There's a Image book with the name The Me You Love in the Dark.
With a name like that, you would think this is by James Tynion.
It's not James Tynion.
Yeah, but it's another one of the longer name titles that have been cropping up lately. And it's a kind of a... It's a sort of like a slightly spooky but mostly character study-ish piece about a sort of a young woman who's like a fine artist. and who's like needs a creative recharge of her battery. She doesn't know what she's doing, but when she was kind of briefly hot in the art world, she made some money and she bought like an old house with it, and she's like just, you know, basically banging her head against the walls trying to be creative and not being able to channel it.
An old haunted house.
And it may, the house may in fact be haunted. There's a particular thing they do in this where the way they depict music is purely as a visual thing. Mm-hmm. And so that, like, once or twice you hear her listening to music, and then later on it's like the her like turntable thing like comes on by itself.
Yeah.
And you see the things, the notes drifting through. And I thought it was a really neat depiction where they're actually not like drawn like little musical notes, but as this like visual symbol that looks ghostly itself.
Yeah.
And I can't quite tell, like, not a ton happens in the first issue.
Yeah, so who knows where it's going.
But the art was fantastic.
So this, we think this is the creative team of Middle West, right?
I think so. Yes, Jorge Corona?
It is. Scotty Young writing and Jorge Corona on art.
Yeah. And I also, Jean-François Bilieu, or something like that, is killing it on the colors.
Yeah.
Anyway, I liked it. It's kind of a neat little intimate and eerie book about a woman in a haunted house.
Me too. It makes you want to go read Middle West, actually.
It did the same for me. So I will check that out and we'll report back. But yes, you should check it out if any of that sounded interesting.
There's also a AWA, which is the guy, it's like Straczynski's publishing company.
Yep.
Has a book called Not All Robots. It takes place in 2056. It is written by Mark Russell, who's known for doing sort of political books, like he did Weirdly the Flintstones reboot. But also, yep.
What's the one with the Jesus?
Second Son.
Second Son.
And a variety of other things. And art by Mike Deodato Jr., so it's very pretty. And it's basically a world in which robots have essentially taken over, in sort of benevolent takeover. They're all the humans, they take care of humans, and they do all the work. And it's sort of not quite the singularity, but the robots at this point are doing all the work because they're better at it than humans. And humans, some of them are fine with it, some of them resist it. And the robots themselves are also starting to be like, well, what are the humans for if all we do is do all the jobs and take care of them? And so it's like there's a faction that wants to kill the humans, and there's a faction that wants to like serve the humans. And it's interesting and fun and weird.
I feel sympathetic to the kill humans faction.
I do too. I understand it.
I get where they're coming from.
Yeah.
These robots aren't dumb.
More and more. yes, all robots.
I will also give a shout out to one of DC's Black Label projects called Suicide Squad Get Joker. This is just what it sounds like. The squad is assigned to take down the Joker, which even for a non-powered guy, he is a super dangerous foe. And this is written by Brian Azzarello, so that's pretty notable. Drawn by Bendis' old partner, Alex Maleev.
Who's the squad in this?
And there's a few other oddballs. There is a very depicted as right-wing, maybe even like borderline racist, Wild Dog.
Oh, I heard that.
Yeah.
I saw the creator of Wild Dog was very unhappy about that.
I get it, but this is kind of clearly one of those like off-brand ones.
Yeah.
So Wild Dog is in it. A few people, I guess Silver Banshee? Silver Banshee is in it. There's a guy, this is kind of goofy, whose nickname is Pebbles, and it's like supposed to be a joke because he hates his nickname and he has some kind of weird powers.
Okay.
There's, several of these, like at least three of these characters, I believe are wholly invented.
Okay.
So they
kill them off at will?
Yeah. But you know what? Since it's a Black Label project, they probably could have done that anyway. I think he wanted to do some new characters.
Okay.
Maybe just say, yeah. Like, it wasn't always, you know, the named characters, even the weirdos. Oh, and notably Jason Todd.
Oh, okay.
Red Hood is in the mix. Huh. He is the leader. He is actually the team leader.
Interesting.
And so there's some interesting conversations with him and Waller about this. Some interesting sort of in-flight banter. And in this first issue, they're sort of tracking down information, so they're not running directly into the Joker most of the time. So, I'm not, like, the biggest fan of Azzarello or of kind of, like, the rated R DC Black Label books most of the time, but I actually found this one pretty readable and fun. It is R-rated, but it's, like, the darker Suicide Squad. It is not as lighthearted as the movie, but it does not, I mean, it's humorless. There's still Harley Quinn is in there. I'm going to give it a casual recommendation. I think it's worth a try out.
So the big release for this week is Batman 89, part of a six-part miniseries by Sam Hamm, originally writer of the Batman 89 movie.
Yep.
And artist by Joe Quinones. They pitched this a while back, and then it finally got done.
Yeah, yeah. It is meant to essentially continue that the Batman 89 movie, which only had one true sequel, the Batman Returns.
Right.
Basically, you know, to get that Burton-ish vibe.
And they've got, they're focusing on stuff that the movie's left aside. So, like, Harvey Dent, that was one of the big things, is Harvey Dent's the main character here, and he's clearly the Billy Dee Williams.
Right, yeah. People probably recall Billy Dee Williams was briefly in there as Harvey Dent in Batman 89 at a party and a few other scenes.
Yeah. I think we would all say that I liked this, but it was not what I expected. It's not like the weird Batman 89. It is a more straightforward, somewhere
between that and like a more traditional Batman comic.
Yeah,
I think the deal is that Sam Hamm, I bet if you read his script for Batman 89 before Burton like kind of added all his visual style and Jack Nicholson chewed up all the scenery and ad-libbed a ton.
Yep.
And, like, basically all of those other elements came together. He probably had a fairly traditional Batman script, and that's what he has done again. And I think I wish they had put it a little bit more through the Tim Burton blender.
I
wanted a little bit more of that weirdness, all those catchy lines like this town needs an enema, or Bob Gunn, and all of that stuff that's so memorable, even though it wasn't like always the smoothest of dialogue, but it was fun and memorable.
Right.
And I kind of wanted more weird. That said, there were some scenes in there that I could still kind of hear the characters' voices as they were in the movie. I actually did like what they're setting up. They're setting Two-Face up, and I think it's a pretty good way to do it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was not what I expected. It wasn't quite what I wanted, but I enjoyed it. I will say there's one thing that is probably maybe a fatal flaw.
Yeah.
Not enough Knox. Where's Knox?
That's true. Neither Knox nor Vicky Vale, if I'm not mistaken, show up in this. Not that I know what they were planning to do with their lives afterwards, but... I bet here's what I'm actually going to bet. I bet Knox shows it within the next issue or two.
He better. If there's no Knox, there's no Randy. That's what I'm saying. All right. So beyond that, there's also Hardware Number One, which is the
continuing the Milestone reboot.
The third issue in the Milestone reboot. This is
Hardware has always been kind of the Iron Man of the Milestone universe.
Weirdly, like the Iron Man meets Punisher.
Yeah.
He kills people. He's like a violent vigilante.
Yeah, in this case, he was scapegoated for what the event that created sort of superpowered beings.
Yeah, yeah.
And is so kind of like on the run. I actually haven't read the issue yet, but I believe that's...
So he's on the run, and he's at odds with his mentor and former boss Alva. What I would say is it feels a lot like the one I read back in the 90s.
Yep.
Which is both good and bad. I feel like I would have liked it to go a little bit further afield.
Right. Yeah. Like, you can't help but do a little comparison.
But it is good. And the art by Dennis Cowan and Bill Sienkiewicz is really nice.
It looked really nice.
Yep.
I actually think he has a very cool costume. Which they've tweaked, of course. But it's still a good design.
One of the surprises for me this week was I Am Batman number 0. I have not been reading Ridley's next Batman stuff. I vaguely know that, I guess Jace Fox is, like, the other brother. He's not Luke Fox, who was Batwing.
Right, but he's, like, one of the sons of Lucius Fox, the longtime best buddy and gadget maker of Batman.
And it looks like maybe he's on the outs with his family. I guess his real name is Tim, and then he changed it to Jace. It looks like he trained with Katana.
Can't have another Tim in the Batman universe.
Basically, he somehow like got hold of a Batman armored suit, and he's trying to crack it so he can use it, and he's trying to become a new Batman type. But as he's doing this,
to take him to Whopper Town,
he's dealing with there's a battle between cops and protesters, and he's getting in the middle of it. They're doing Renee Montoya, who's now commissioner. They do some interesting stuff with her in here.
This is like near future.
I can't really tell, and that's the thing. Is like,
I mean,
is it current?
It's current.
It feels like a continuity I don't understand.
Because they basically went for the whole future state stuff, and then they're working backwards. Because
the magistrate's in there, yeah.
And they're working backwards. That's what happens. This is how they're getting
it. And future state was only like a few years in the future, at least for some of the titles.
So what I'll say is I did not have a built-in enthusiasm for it. This is a solid sort of origin type story, and Travel Forman does really nice art. I don't feel like I know everything that's going on in it, but I like what I see.
Okay. That bodes well. Makes me want to check it out.
Pennyworth, which is a 7-issue miniseries. It's not an adaptation of the Epics TV show, but it is based on the show about Alfred's spy adventures in the 50s?
Yeah.
I think I heard that the show is not set then, but this is actually a little maybe even more flashbacky than that? Or is the show then?
I have no idea. I didn't watch the show. It was on
FX. I think just from the solicit, when I was making a sign for this, I think they said, you know, set between, you know, like, almost like as a prologue to the show. Like his early spy adventures, which I guess he has later spy adventures.
Nick, did you read this?
I did. I actually found it to be really interesting. I don't know who Scott Brian Wilson is. I don't know if he has any involvement in
the Beach Boys television show.
Yeah, that's sure. Right. He's one of the Beach Boys.
But I like the really good artwork.
Please.
I like the approach of this story, which is a series sort of a flashbacks while somebody has Alfred, who looks like the current Alfred that we know.
Right, like bald Alfred, yeah.
Basically has been kidnapped and tied up, and he's sort of recounting kind of a past affair in Russia, dealing with a kind of, I want to say, larger-than-life threat. The artwork by Juan Gedeon, which I know that name from somewhere,
yeah, I recognize the name.
Is gorgeous. It's clean. It's very easy to kind of discern what's happening. The action scenes are great. But I kind of like the handle on this Alfred. We get to see him as a young boy, sort of shadowing his father as a butler to kind of a prominent English family.
Mm-hmm. Shadow butler.
A shadow butler, yes.
Nick, does it make you kind of want to try the show out?
A little bit. I don't know if I'll ever do it, but this was a really interesting kind of foray into that world.
Okay. All right.
I
think, given that none of us had any expectations of it, that's a pretty good review.
I was telling
Dave. I will say this, I didn't read it, but I flipped through it, and that art is super good.
I was telling Dave off mic that it reminded me a little bit of like a Greg Rucka-like project of like a
little more serious take on espionage than they sometimes do, but not maybe quite as hardcore as
not quite as Queen and Country, but
less burnout.
Less burnout. More sci-fi elements, but some really cool stuff.
Marvel has a new Defenders book, Defenders number 1, by Al Ewing, who you may know from Immortal Hulk and Guardians of the Galaxy, a few other things.
I feel like this is a story that Marvel has been building up for quite some time.
Yeah, artisted by Javier Rodriguez, who recently did the History of the Marvel Universe we all liked.
Also did that one shot that Avengers 1000.
This turns out of, Marvel Comics 1000.
Or Marvel Comics 1000.
And basically, there's this character, the Masked Raider, who has this this Infinity Mask that gives him all kinds of abilities. He goes to Doctor Strange. There's some kind of cosmic threat, and Doctor Strange has to throw a bunch of tarot cards to summon a team that he has no full control over. And it summons in the Silver Surfer, Harpy, and Cloud. So it's a mix of, like, Cloud was from the New Defenders. Harpy was in, as Red She-Hulk was in a recent Defenders.
Yeah.
I want to say Fearless Defenders. I think maybe she was in the all-female one.
I believe so.
Silver Surfer's in the original. Dr. Strange references the Secret Defenders in here. Like, basically all the eras of the Defenders are being brought into this, but it is a sort of weird cosmic book. They all have a big power level, and they're facing down with some sort of cosmic threat that is also magic-related. It's weird and strange, and I really, really dug it. I did not know what to expect.
This is kind of a putting the band together issue, but with weird Doctor Strange stuff going on, and also, I should say, stunning art by Javier Rodriguez.
And there's time travel. Which I thought was interesting. So, yeah, it's a really good first issue. I'm super excited to see where he goes with this. He's done really good with sort of high concept weirdness in Immortal Hulk, and this feels of a piece with that.
Yeah, he might be the right guy for Defenders. Historically, one of the weirdest teams.
And a hard book to write.
Yeah, it's like, especially as originally conceived, it was like some of the most powerful people at Marvel.
Yeah.
Silver Surfer, Doctor Strange, Hulk, and Namor. Who am I missing? And Namor. And yet they're like, they function terribly as a team. They're always on the verge of breaking up.
Yep.
I kind of like that, the weirdness of it, and then, like, over the years, they would bring in a lot of weird kind of Z-list heroes and other oddities.
Yeah, the era in the 80s where it was, like,
Son Beast, of Satan.
It was Beast and Iceman and Cloud and Valkyrie and Gargoyle, like...
Yep, and yet I like the Defenders broadly as a concept,
even if
I can't name a ton of Defender stories I've loved.
Yeah.
I also love that Javier Rodriguez draws Doctor Strange's magic in very Doctor Strange-y.
Well, yeah, it looks like Ditko style, but it also looks kind of like updated, like, you know, but like not like cheesy special effects, let the colorist do all the work kind of stuff. It clearly loves Ditko.
Yep.
I don't know if anybody else read Avengers, Tech on Avengers number one.
Yeah. The sequel to Mech Strike, isn't that what it is?
No, it's not. Not related to Mech Strike. This is another toy line. It is Oroki, I think is the name of it. It's a company that makes basically, they're like fully articulated battle bot Avengers. And so I think they gave this to Jim Zub and were like, hey, make a comic around it. So it's interesting because it is clearly like the MCU version of the characters for the most part. Except that Wolverine's in it. And Spider-Man is Peter Parker and has Mary Jane. But in a lot of ways, like, it starts out at this big ceremony where they have successfully defeated Thanos as he got the Infinity Gauntlet, although it seems he also did at some point kill half the universe. So they're giving a speech, and all of a sudden Peter's Spider-Sense goes off, big explosion happens, and Red Skull shows up with the Infinity Belt, and he basically uses it to take everybody's powers away.
Okay.
And
is that why they have to have mech suits?
That's why they have to have mech suits. So then they escape that, but then like we got to go after him. He got the dust from the Infinity Gems.
Yep.
And so he doesn't have full Infinity Gauntlet power, but he has a lot of Infinity Gauntlet power.
Okay.
And basically the team is all going together. So it's like Captain Marvel, who at this point now is just a soldier, along with Black Panther, who's got his vibranium, and a depowered skinny Steve Rogers, who is like, no, I'm still going. And they all go to fight him, and spoilers, Tony Stark makes them all armored suits.
Neat.
I don't know.
Sounds goofy but fun.
It is. It's goofy but fun is how I would put it. It was surprisingly enjoyable. It's got a little bit of goofy manga art. I think if you liked Mech Strike, you're going to like Tech on Avengers.
Tech on.
Dark Horse was another spinoff from Jeff Lemire's
Black Hammer universe.
With the unbelievable Unteens, which is his take on... everything from Teen Titans to Doom Patrol to a little bit of New Mutants.
But I would say leaning into Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
And it is the premise is, I think I can sort of say it.
Yeah.
There's a lady who's a writer artist of comics, and her most successful ones are the Unteens, or kind of a Doom Patrol, New Mutants-ish type group.
Yep.
And at some point, shortly following after the events of an exhausting convention signing day, she seems to meet an actual live version of one of the characters from her comic
yep.
who tells her everything you write is true.
They're just memories you've suppressed.
And you are also one of the Unteens.
Yes.
And we need to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And there's cool stuff that comes out from there. The art in this is so freaking good.
Tyler Crook, always good.
Yep. And it's another good Jeff Lemire issue. Like, yep. I like all of his pastiches of Marvel DC stuff that take place in a slightly R-rated universe, just mostly for swearing. It's honest, like, there's not, like, a lot of sex or anything
right.
like
no,
that.
It's mostly swearing.
But, yeah, he's like, you know, it's when you see a ghost, you drop the F-bomb in his books. anyway, it's really good, though. I was reminded of how much I do enjoy the Black Hammer setting.
Then there's Campisi, the Dragon Incident. This is a new Aftershock book.
Is Campisi a name?
I'm hard pressed. I can't. Campisi is the neighborhood. There's like this enforcer who works for a crime boss, and in the first part he shows up and he like drives away some low level drug dealers. He's like, no, this is our territory. But by the end, he's fighting a dragon to keep the neighborhood safe. It's a very strange book. I don't know how to pitch it, but it's weird. And if that sounds interesting to you, that's what it's about.
I kind of like the art in it too.
Yeah, yeah.
A little stylized looking.
Batman Urban Legends this week has a couple notable things. It wraps up the Red Hood story with some pretty big status quo changes, and it also has a revelation about Tim Drake, which I did not see coming, but I like.
If you're floating around in the online community, you've probably seen it or seen people gnashing their teeth out of it because they're jagoffs.
Yep.
But honestly, Randy, the thing that happens in the Red Hood story, in some ways, is a bigger story.
Yeah.
It's an actual thing that's going to, like, potentially change his character if they follow up on it, and I kind of think they will.
Probably so.
Yeah.
Also, graphic novel-wise, Run, which is the sequel to March. This is John Lewis's run for Congress. Basically, it's right after the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah, the real life congressman who marched with MLK.
It's co-written by his writer from March. It's got the artist Nate Powell from March. And so it's a sequel to it. It's a real nice hardcover. Definitely worth a read. March is also really great. With John Lewis gone, I assume they'll finish this out with his notes. I hope so. But yeah, it's nice to see it come out. There are a bunch of stuff. There's an issue of Joker. There's an issue of Daredevil. There's the final issue of Spider-Man, Spider-Shadow. Another issue of Zdarsky's Justice League Last Ride. A lot of Zdarsky this week.
And also all pretty good stuff.
And then the second issue of Ordinary Gods from Image that I really liked the first issue of. Anything else on y'all's stack?
I think that's it for me.
All the X-Books, and then I want to say the second issue of the Masters of the Universe Revelation.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which I enjoyed quite a bit.
Okay, well, that's comics. I'll be back in just a second. We're going to talk about the Suicide Squad. Not the squad, but the movie that's about the Suicide Squad.
Oh.
So this weekend, they released Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad, which is not Suicide Squad 2, but also Suicide Squad 2.
Yes.
So this is the Suicide Squad movie that James Gunn... Basically, James Gunn was fired from Disney because a right-wing troll outed a bunch of his old tweets.
Yep.
Disney got scared.
Yeah, he was apologetic about it and everything
But he
got fired.
DC snapped him up, as well they should. He made Suicide Squad, and now he's going back to make Guardians.
Yep. And I guess the question of whether or not he may do some follow-up stuff with DC is still kind of open.
Well, we know he's doing I Am Peacemaker on the network. HBO Max.
Anyway, this is a sort of, you know, if you couldn't tell from the trailers, and you probably could, a kind of gleefully R-rated, James Gunn unleashed, it still has the heart, I would say, of Guardians of the Galaxy, but pushes it into the R-rating realm with abandon.
I don't know that it has the same heart.
I think it does.
I feel like its character arc is unearned.
I disagree, sir.
Yeah. So let's first say we're on a spectrum as always here. I am the hater in that I only liked it and only thought it was the second best DC movie made.
But you're also gonna like maybe revisit it.
I will. But that's the thing. I think because at the far end here, I liked it the least of the three of us. But I still really liked it.
Yeah.
I just was disappointed. I was going into this. I love the Suicide Squad. I love Austin's Suicide Squad is one of my top five comics.
Yep.
And so I had expectations, and going in, this did not meet them.
I know that you and I, Randy, kind of both hoped that, for instance, Amanda Waller, who has a nuanced character as created in the late 80s, that they would kind of take her out of the one-note manipulator that she was in the first movie, instead they just ran with it.
Yeah, Viola Davis has very little to do in this movie.
Other characters get to have arcs, and she is an evil Amanda Waller.
That's one of my biggest gripes about it.
But like in some ways, I feel like that's the sort of one of the easiest to dispense with because it was just a continuation of what had already happened.
Yeah,
and I think they were not intending to overturn it. They weren't even trying, clearly.
Right.
But so Randy, you are on the more critical end of the spectrum. I liked it, but didn't quite love it, which somewhat to be expected because I actually sort of feel that way about all of James Gunn's movies. And Nick, you pretty fully embraced it.
I did. I thought it was great.
I do think there's a lot of great stuff in it. Like I can recount many, many scenes I loved, character arcs I liked. And I was pleasantly surprised by things. Like they used characters I didn't expect them to use, like Ratcatcher 2.
Yeah.
What's funny is like we are used to if people who read like encyclopedia entries on characters, nobody in the comics actually calls themselves Ratcatcher 2 usually. They're just I'm the new Ratcatcher.
Yep.
But sometimes when they list them in like Wikipedia and stuff, it'll be that's Ratcatcher 2.
Yep.
You know, the guy who took up the costume, or it's the son or daughter of someone. Well, here they like actually do it and it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of a rarity that happens in like superhero movies. I watched it with my wife and she was like, okay, so the Polka Dot Man, what does he do? And I was like, I have no clue. I barely know who the Polka Dot Man is. And
they were drawing on some obscure ones.
Yeah. And I was like, I love that actor.
And of course, they were even doing the film interpretation. So, like, whatever Polka Dot Man does in the comics, that was like a new version of
it. Yeah, completely. And it was
who had a tragicomic backstory and one of the funnier recurring gags.
Yeah. Also, his power was shown very weirdly as a kind of. The little his deformity as he let
he would
polka dots,
like grow these like giant like tumorous super brightly rainbow colored blots. Are we spoiling this?
Yes.
Okay. Just know that going forward. Spoiler warning on.
But this was Idris Elba's movie.
Well, hang on. I just got a quick rewind on Polka Dot Man and say. This guy had problems with his mother, and throughout the whole movie, envisions different characters as his mother, up to and including
Star Wars,
a giant kaiju-sized version of the mother he hated.
Yes.
But yes, Idris Elba clearly kind of taking the role of Deadshot from the first one, where he's a guy who's in jail, but who has some love for his kid and is trying to connect.
This is interesting. According to Wikipedia, which is not 100% accurate always times, but he was originally cast to replace Will Smith as Deadshot, and they changed it to Bloodsport to allow Smith to reprise his role in the future.
He didn't...
Oh, weird.
Yeah, I don't think he wanted to be Deadshot, or...
Well, I don't know. That's interesting, because it does feel like Deadshot. I mean, he's got the daughter. It feels like a Deadshot story.
Yeah, it does.
Right. He just has, like, weirder kind of teched up. It's like he can almost invent weapons on the fly with, like, nanotech.
Although his relationship with his daughter was a little different than Will Smith's relationship, which actually could be showed as normal. This one, they had a shouting match in a prison.
Yep. However it began, I liked the way he portrayed it.
Yeah.
And I think I like watching Idris Elba do kind of darkly comedic stuff.
Yeah. Also, I thought his gimmick was fun, that he basically had a ton of weapons on his person at all times, and he would... I don't know much about Bloodsport, other than I think he showed up in a Superman comic.
He was kind of created as a one-off villain for Superman one time, but they did do a thing where he did have a weapon that Lex Luthor had gotten to him. That could fire like little kryptonite needles.
Yeah.
And so they're the line in the thing about him putting Superman in the hospital with a kryptonite bullet is straight up taken from the comics.
Yeah.
But yeah, they gave him a noble streak and like a wholly different backstory than the comics and did a good job. Who else do we have in this movie?
Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn and Rick Flag both return.
Yep.
As does Boomerang briefly.
Rick Flagg is a better version of the same character, he gets better writing. That's all.
Joel Kinnaman delivers it better and is not constrained by David Ayer's darkness.
Well, and then I guess the other one we're missing is Sylvester Stallone's character.
Right, King Shark. King Shark is actually in some ways my least favorite character because I thought a lot of his jokes kind of thudded.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep. But a lot of people loved him. Like, he's been... There's a lot of people talking about how he's a special boy who did nothing wrong. I mean, he's definitely...
it's a different sense of humor, but yeah, I just thought that, like, those weren't Gunn's best gags.
Did we talk about Peacemaker?
Oh, right. And Peacemaker is in there, a.k.a. John Cena, a.k.a. a, like, complete D-bag Captain America type... But instead of being the kind of, like, angsty, serious one that U.S. Agent was on Falcon and Winter Soldier, he is, like, almost like the Tick, was a little filtered in there, like, very over the top. Anybody saw the trailers and the bit where he's talking about eating dicks for liberty will know what I'm talking about.
Oh, also Peter Capaldi as the thinker.
Yeah, he gets to kind of... It's a sort of low-level sub-boss role... But he does get to have some fun with it. He gets at least one of my favorite bits, comedic bits.
The opening thing where they introduce, they have a bunch of characters. They've
very
got
energetic
Savant,
opening.
They've got Blackguard, Javelin. They've got Javelin, they've got TDK, which is otherwise known as Arm Fall Off Boy.
Yeah.
which, by the way, they should have just gone and called him Arm Fall Off Boy. He's going to be in for that short time.
Yeah.
And then Sean Gunn playing Weasel. Sean Gunn, his job is playing anthropomorphic animals.
Well, he also plays another character in the movie, too.
He does, yes.
He plays Calendar Man.
Who's the other anthropomorphic person he's playing?
Rocket Raccoon.
Ah, okay.
He's a body double for Rocket. By the way, King Shark, Steve Agee, the comedian who also was in Guardians 2, he was the on-set double for him, which makes a lot of sense.
Oh, what was the name of Michael Rooker? Is that the actor?
He played Savant.
Savant, that was the
Gail
character.
Simone's characters. Yep.
Ah, okay, I forgot that that's who that was.
And then I forgot this character existed, but there was Mongal.
Yep.
Yep, a alien, although they kind of did is she an alien princess? We don't know. Yeah, and so they're the initial team recruited. There's a bloody opening in which it's revealed, in which, like, most of this team gets gunned down. And in the sort of dark comedy that will set the tone for the whole thing, you realize they were the distraction team.
Yeah.
Now, a few people survive it. Rick Flagg survives. Yep. Harley Quinn survives. Maybe that's it. Oh, well, no. One other post-credit sequence survival.
Yes.
I guess I won't say, just in case.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn also gets an aside that's about her capture and attempted wooing by the... the revolutionary, they're like the right wing government.
He's the dictator of Corto
Maltese. Yeah, of Corto Maltese, which is a kind of a fun throwback to Frank Miller's Dark Knight, which was itself using the name of a European comic.
Yeah, Corto Maltese has appeared in a bunch of DC comics and shows and stuff.
Yeah,
it's anarchic.
Vicki Vale took photos there.
It's anarchic fun, honestly.
Yeah.
Yes, people, the body count is high.
There's a lot of gore. I think I heard my sister-in-law enjoyed it, but was almost too much. Like, it's pretty violent.
It's pretty violent.
It is.
You know what I was thinking of, what reminded me of this? I was thinking about, like, people and their capacity for dark humor. You know in Raiders of the Lost Ark when Indy Jones is fighting that dude under the plane?
Yeah.
And then, like, the big bald dude, and then, like, he's losing, and then the propeller hits the guy, and right before it happens, he covers his face just so he doesn't get, like, blood sprayed all over him.
Yeah.
And everybody laughs at that. No matter who you are, you're going to laugh at that and maybe wince a little bit.
Everybody likes a Nazi to go through a propeller.
Everybody likes it. But it is kind of what this whole movie feels like. Yeah. If that made you wince, there may be some other scenes in this, or maybe, like, 50 of them that make you wince.
Honestly, my favorite scene is also the kind of craziest one, where they basically take out an entire camp full of what are supposed to be like the
rebels,
the counter-revolutionaries or whatever. Yeah,
they didn't know that. Waller told them that they were the most dangerous, like their big threat.
It is, but it is played as a gag that they go through and they kill like 20, 30 innocent people.
Yeah,
In different ways.
Well, and also it's like Bloodsport and John Cena having like
a contest
essentially, which I always like to see.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a swinging dick contest.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, one of my favorite bits in there was I actually liked Harley's side story that she got, but like when she goes nuts and you kind of get, I guess, Harley vision.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like she's in like cartoon land.
Yes.
But in the real world, she is like just gunning down dozens of bad
didn't
dudes.
Didn't they do that in her actual series?
They kind of did that in their series. Yeah.
Yeah, where they showed that's what she sees.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of liked it.
Not blood, but flowers gushing from people's bodies as she guns them down.
I think my ultimate gripe about all of this is that it's not that this is a bad movie. It's fun. It's James Gunn doing his thing. But I had hopes based on... I have seen this comic done really, really well.
You wanted to see the more nuanced version that John Ostrander created. Version.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, I don't know why I expected that. Guardians of the Galaxy is hardly anything like the Abnett and Lanning one. It's very different.
Right.
But for whatever reason, that has a little more heart, and I connected with it more. This, because it was just so maybe cynical.
Yeah, it is. And although I will say it's a cynical viewpoint on the United States of America manipulating other countries and exploiting them. I was like, this is a correct view.
Yeah. Lead characters do go back in to save this country from a runaway starfish alien.
Yes.
Because that is the right thing to do. So they, like... It should work for me, and I don't know quite why it doesn't.
It's utilizing a book you love, and
I think that's part of it.
And right, and it picked bits and pieces, like it used the big base from one of their notable storylines, Jotunheim, that shows up a few times. But they just kind of use it. It's just a name in the movie,
designs.
I think that's what the thing is. Like when in the MCU, when they do the nods, I feel like it's from people. It's a place of like, oh, this is how we fit this in. Here, it just feels like just Easter eggs. Where I'm like, hey, recognize that. And it doesn't quite have the same give to me.
I can see it.
Yeah, I can see where that is.
I can see how a baby might say that.
I also think they gave away way too much in the trailers. Like, a lot of my favorite lines, favorite gags, those were all in the trailers.
You know, what's interesting is I did not feel that.
Yeah, I
there was lots of gags that I liked that did not make the trailer cut. I'm going to say, Ratcatcher 2 threatening to send a dozen rats up the ass of the Thinker. What he says afterwards.
Also, never thought I'd see Starro getting eaten alive by millions of rats.
Yeah. Yep. Or a giant Starro mom.
By the way, I wish they had not told us Starro was in it.
I do think that... I do wish that.
There was no need for them to tell us.
I have this feeling they knew it was going to leak or something. Like, they must have done it as, like, as a control thing.
I also thought the decision that Starfish kills the host was a bad call.
That is a little weird. Did they definitely kill the host?
Yeah, they definitely did. Yeah,
they weren't just, like, falling down.
They straight up said it.
Well, I guess their idea was that, like, thousands had died, but it would have been, like, everybody.
Yeah, I just... I mean, there's a couple reasons. One is that it increased the body count, which is just an unfortunate thing in DC movies. And the other is it meant that they couldn't have any of the characters, like, taken over briefly by... Like, there's no point where Harley had to fight Bloodsport, or Bloodsport had to fight Ratcatcher because one of them got taken over. And I would have liked to have seen that.
I remember in the comics when they, I believe, first did the Starro as, like, facehugger mind takeover. Yeah. I believe it was in Justice League Europe. Drawn by Bart Sears.
Yeah.
It was like a 5-part storyline, and I was like, oh, this takes this old, you know, Silver Age villain and uses him in kind of a cool way. And there was a part of me that was pleased to just see that level of, like, well, Starro in general, though I do wish they'd kept it hidden. I liked seeing Starro.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
I don't know if people know, but he was in Justice League number one in the 1950s. Yeah. Like, literally the first guy that the Justice League fought.
The one thing I couldn't figure out, and maybe I was just like, this was so obscure, if this was just James Gunn being James Gunn, was what were the weird jellyfish that were attacking King Shark?
I don't know either, and I guess I just assumed they were just another experiment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just was like...
They needed, like, King Shark to leap through a wall or something, and they're like, yeah, let's have these things attack him.
Yeah.
I mean, it just felt kind of random, and I was like, okay.
So we didn't talk about this. I liked seeing the ground crew.
Oh, yeah.
So Steve Agee, who also was the King Shark, he plays John Economos, who is the warden of Bell Rev. There is Flo, who's a member of the ground crew. Like, I like seeing, and they mentioned...
weirdly, those characters did get to be shown as redeemable, even though they were also betting on who got to die.
That was pretty...
That was like, you know what this kind of compares to? That reminded me, of course, of Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, it did.
This is like a big, crazy, super villain version of that.
Yeah.
with behind-the-scenes team that's kind of skeevy. But they actually get the nuance that Amanda Waller didn't.
It's true.
By the way, my favorite gag, this was not in the trailer, was the death of Javelin with Harley Quinn and his heartfelt final moments, and her getting bitterly angry when he doesn't quite get to finish his last wishes.
Hold this, Javelin, for... Yeah.
For who?
Ultimately, though, Starro doesn't get defeated if Javelin does not die and give it to Harley. So,
yeah, good job, Javelin.
Who plays them? Flora.
Fluborg.
Fluborg.
And he's fun.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think, Rainey, would you say that people should see it?
Yes, I would say that my complaints are very specific, and have a lot to do with me really liking the comic. I don't think it's a perfect movie. I think it's got some actual objective flaws, and I can certainly point out actual flaws in storytelling and that kind of thing.
But you think it is a lesser movie than Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey?
I think Birds of Prey is a better movie because I honestly think Margot Robbie is, like, probably the best person that they have in the DCU, and this is less of a starring role for her.
I like it over Birds of Prey and Guardians of the Galaxy 2, but probably not Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is where I land. Nick, of these things, you have to compare it just for grins.
I mean, I like it more than the first Suicide Squad.
Okay.
Everyone likes it more than the first Suicide Squad.
Although I find the first Suicide Squad movie pretty watchable.
Yeah. Terrible plot.
Disagree.
Terrible plot, but some fun stuff.
Yep, I agree with you, Nick. And that's why I was sad to see Boomerang go. I felt like Boomerang still had legs.
Yeah. That was the one kind of, I was like, oh, I wish they didn't. And Kaylee was like, you were attached to him? I was like, I kind of like Boomerang. He's kind of
I was glad they killed that Boomerang because he was not the true Boomerang.
But they do introduce the idea of that somebody else could be Captain Boomerang. It could be Captain Boomerang 2, and it could be...
Sure.
It's his super speed son, which I don't like either.
I feel like they could do something with that.
Yeah. I like this a little bit more than Birds of Prey, but just a hair more.
Okay.
It doesn't touch either of the Guardians.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, I think we all would generally recommend watching, especially because it's, you know, you have HBO Max, it's free.
It goes like this. Rainey generally recommends, Dave recommends, Nick enthusiastically recommends.
Yes.
Yep.
All right, that's it for our episode, for our show this week. We should say, if you enjoy our podcasting, Dave and I have a side project with Anna that we just released called The Other Half, a G.I. Joe podcast.
Yep.
There are two episodes out so far. It's going to be a bi-weekly release. We've been getting sort of good response on that. But go to our Facebook page, give that a like, give it a listen.
Yeah, it is an issue by issue read and analysis with a lot of fun going on of like about a half. They're short, little bite sized half hour episodes.
Half hours, yeah.
Starting with G.I. Joe number one from like 1981, and we're going forward. Yeah, each episode is an issue.
Which y'all honestly. If you're listening to this podcast, you can skip the first episode because it's just cutting out what we did on the roadcast. Yeah.
But if you want to find out what happens when the G.I. Joes went to Afghanistan and teamed up with the proto-Taliban, which they really did do, and like all sorts of other crazy and fun stuff and cool stuff that we've been finding out as we revisit them and introduce the comic to Anna, check it out. Check out the other half.
Yeah. And until next week,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.